Welcome to the Amy Edwards Show. I'm your host, Amy Edwards. Thrilled that you're here. We're moving forward with part two from Natalie Ledbetter, Dr. Natalie Ledbetter. And we talked sugar last episode, and now we're going to talk perimenopause. And if you listen to that sugar episode, then you know I don't know much. So if you think you don't know much, great. You're in the right place, because I don't know anything. I'm not like sitting here like, you know, from some sort of scientific knowledge background or anything of the, not even close. So welcome to the show. I hope you're doing well. I hope you're like, you know, tuning in and just ready to have a good time and learn something with me today. So let's welcome our guest, Dr. Natalie Ledbetter. Natalie, I'm so glad you're here and back. You're a doctor of Chinese medicine. You are an anesthetist nurse, and you are the CEO and founder of Upgrade Labs right here in Austin, Texas. Yeah. So you are into biohacking, but you also have a very balanced view. I have not asked you how old you are, but I am curious.
56.
56. I was guessing somewhere around there because of the ages of your children, things like that. Yeah. And so you're 56, and we're going to talk perimenopause today, which I don't even know what perimenopause means. I barely know what menopause means, except you stop having your period and you have hot flashes, right? That's what we hear.
Yes.
So let's dive in. I would encourage everyone to listen to the sugar episode two. We cover a little bit more about Natalie's background, which we will talk some about that today as well. But let's talk perimenopause.
Okay. Woo.
I know. Perimenopause. So, what is it?
The definition of menopause is when you have had 12 months since your last period.
Oh, okay.
So, then you're officially in menopause.
That's clear.
Yes. Perimenopause is where it's before. Peri means before or around.
Oh, okay.
Menopause.
Why don't they just say pre?
You could say premenopause.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Premenopause. So, so in when you're in that phase where you haven't yet been 12 consecutive months without a period, this is that la-la land termed pre or perimenopause. Interesting thing is that it can start as young as 35. I mean, it could start younger, but 35
I've had friends say it in their late 30s and stuff.
Yes, yes. So
how do they know?
There's a lot. We'll talk about how you know. So perimenopause typically can last 5 to 10 years, sometimes longer. You know, we're all humans. We're all different. But about 5 to 10 years is average for perimenopause. So sometime 5 to 10 years before you actually stop having your period for 12 months is perimenopause. And symptoms of what that means is just as we go along living our lives, our body, our ovaries, and everything gets a little tired. And so we start producing.
They're tired too?
Yeah, they're tired too.
So like, okay.
We start producing less hormones than we once did. And their levels just start slowly falling off. The interesting thing is they don't all fall off evenly. So it's like this roller coaster where, sometimes they're high, sometimes they're low, sometimes one's high and one's low. It's just all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
When you start to, my first symptom was at about 45. So I've been in perimenopause now for 12 years.
So you're not menopausal. You are not yet. Still perimenopausal.
Still perimenopausal. I think I'm really close to the end. So we'll see.
My sister, I kind of gauge mine by my sister. She's four years older than me. So she's the same as you.
Yeah. So still hanging on.
Still hanging on.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but in Chinese medicine, they say it's good that you want to have your period as long as you can. So I'm like, okay.
Why?
It's just healthy to bleed.
Hormones?
Well, and it's also healthy to bleed because one of the theories of why women live longer than men is that we bleed. And so
what? Why?
Because iron, extra iron. So people say, oh, take your iron. Well, iron is a pro-oxidant. You know, you see something iron and it rusts.
Yes.
That's oxidization. So iron, hemoglobin, iron in our body, one of the theories is that it increases oxidation. And so if we have too much iron, then we're having more of that oxidation going on. And so women, we bleed every month so that we aren't collecting too much hemoglobin. We're not collecting too much iron in our system. That's a theory.
But oh, that's so interesting. Yeah. Wow. Justin has that thing where he has too much iron. He has to go like get blood and get
blood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he on testosterone? Because oftentimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah. People who are on testosterone sometimes will have that
happen. Oh, interesting. It's genetic or something. Okay. So your first symptoms of perimenopause.
So my first symptoms of perimenopause was I used to get sleep anywhere, anytime. I could fall asleep. you know, right here on your floor or in this chair. No problem. All of a sudden, I couldn't fall asleep. And I would be laying there. And I'm like, why can't I sleep? And the little hamster on the wheel in the brain is like,
yeah.
Thinking. And I'm like, oh my gosh, please let me fall asleep. And then I start freaking out that, oh my God, I have to get up in however many hours and I'm not asleep yet. And it was just this terrible thing. And then once I finally fell asleep, about 2 or 3 in the morning, I would wake up again. And then I was like, I couldn't fall back asleep. That was my first symptom. And I didn't really know what was happening. I just kind of found out later that insomnia, sleep issues is a really early warning sign.
Why?
Part of it is progesterone. As our progesterone levels start to decline, progesterone acts on the GABA receptors in the brain, and the GABA receptors are the ones that are the calm, relaxing, anti-anxiety. So it's like our natural Valium that we have in our body.
Okay.
When that natural Valium level starts to fall, the progesterone levels start to fall, then we have more of that anxiety and more of the little hamster on the wheel thinking through everything. What's going on? Should I do this? Should I do that? What did I not do?
Yeah.
So that's part of it. But the symptoms of perimenopause can range very widely. Insomnia, difficulty falling asleep, difficulty staying asleep, irritability, mood swings, depression, anxiety, panic attacks, hot flashes, night sweats, weight gain, especially around the middle, thinning hair, thyroid problems, memory loss, menopausal and perimenopausal.
Oh my God.
Brain fog.
So many people have filled up their bingo card like, I'm at blackout.
Yeah. Yes. So okay. Those are some of the joys that can happen. Mm-hmm.
But some of those come with age. So it's sometimes tough to discern what's just happening, or maybe it's happening with age because it's perimenopause.
What I suggest is for women to get your hormones tested, even when you're young. When you're in your 20s, get your hormones tested just so you have a baseline. What is your normal testosterone? What does your estrogen? Now, with estrogen fluctuates really wildly. So I like a Dutch test, which is a dried urine test. But anyway, even if you just got your blood done, it's good to have a little snapshot.
Wait, it's a dried urine test for hormones?
Dutch test is looking at hormones.
Okay.
And the metabolites of hormones.
I think a lot of people, and I know I have in my life, all of a sudden like go, now I got to figure out where to get it tested, you know? Mm-hmm. And that in itself can be a block. Yes. Like it feels like another thing to figure out. And you're like, I already have fucking brain fog from or whatever.
One more thing on top of it.
Yeah. So like that, when somebody says, I don't even know where to go to do that, what do you tell them?
Well, anybody who lives here in Austin, my husband, Dr. Billy Ledbetter, has the clinics, L Aesthetics and Longevity. There are 3 clinics around Austin. And for only $150, they'll do this really nice, pretty comprehensive panel.
Really?
It looks at your thyroid. It looks at your vitamin D, your B vitamins.
Nice.
It's like your sex hormone and all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So for $150, they keep it that cheap, reasonable, to make it accessible to almost anyone.
Okay, that's great.
That's
I just wanted to clarify that. And and also, if you're in Texas, Ways to Well is also a good option. That's what I've used. Ways to Well, that's Brigham Bueller's company that's been on the show.
Nice.
So, okay.
And some, I don't, not every state, like New York, you can't do your own blood work. You have to get a doctor to prescribe it for you. But in most states, you can go to one of those
Any lab test now,
whatever. Yeah, where and sometimes they can be a little pricey, but it's worth calling them up and seeing, like, hey, what do you charge for a hormone panel? But I would recommend.
Great. Okay.
In your 20s, get your hormones tested so you have a baseline just to see where you kind of hang out. If you didn't, you know, like
I didn't.
Us.
We weren't doing that back then.
No.
And then nobody, a doctor in the 90s was talking about that.
A doctor would have been like, what? You want what? Why do you want that?
Yeah.
But just so wherever you are now, get your hormones tested.
Okay.
Even if you're not having any symptoms, just to see what's going on and see where you are. That's a good place to start. And two, if you're having the symptoms, don't let anybody tell you, oh, it's all in your head or you're totally fine. perimenopause is a roller coaster. It doesn't have to be. It's not for everyone. But for 80% of the women, it's usually like, it's hang on to the seat of your pants. About 20% of women don't have a whole lot of symptoms and they're totally fine. But another 20% of women have like terrible symptoms that are extremely life altering. And then the rest are in the middle. But you can go from, I used to have a great memory. My vocabulary was excellent. I was never at a loss for words. And I was great at arguing and fighting my poor husband. That is not what you said. He goes, that's not what I meant. That's what you said. And I could always use these great words. But now the universe is laughing at me. Okay, I'm getting you back for that. Because I'll be in the middle, like I was in the earlier in one of our conversations. I'll be in the middle of a sentence and then I'll be like,
what was I talking about?
Oh, that's it. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Or I'll try to think of a word like hormone.
Mm-hmm.
You're a what is that word? You know? So it's interesting, the brain fog.
I'm noticing that. I don't love the term brain fog. Mm-hmm. I just have noticed that my mind is not quite the same, you know? And I just try to give myself grace around it, but I have noticed like, and I'll notice things that I have seen older women do.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, wow. I just didn't understand what my kids were doing. Like, I'll just not quite grasp something for a minute. It just takes me longer. And I'm like, you know, okay. Like, and yeah, but it's weird because there's a little step outside myself. Like, oh, man, look at you. You're getting older, you know? And it's like
yeah. What was that?
Yeah, a little bit of that.
That's why I think it's so important that we're having this conversation so that men and women, everyone, because no matter what your gender or your preferred or chosen gender is, you know someone who is a biological woman who's going through or will go through perimenopause. So mm-hmm. It's going to affect everyone. Because my husband is like, oh, make sure you tell him that, you know, the husband really needs to understand this too, because I've never been extremely stable and steady. Been kind of volatile with my moods, had a lot of anxiety and depression when I was younger. And I did find out later that because of my high stress levels with the job that I did doing anesthesia, and I worked 24-hour shifts and I worked scary, you know, shifts.
And just the sleep, you know, changes there can not affect you.
Yes. And then having three children in the midst of anesthesia school, working 24-hour shifts. And I didn't realize it at the time, because in Western medicine, you're not taught that self-care is extremely important. You're just taught 24-hour shift, suck it up, buttercup, do it, drink more coffee. You know, and I lived on 2 to 3 pots of coffee a day. I started smoking cigarettes. How stupid is that? But you're doing 24-hour shifts, and it's 2 in the morning, and you're like, oh, I have this bowel obstruction that we've got to do. And I have to be awake and alert. And so you go smoke a cigarette just to get that nicotine hit.
Scary on 20 different fronts. You know? Yeah.
It's not ideal.
No.
And I don't know that people do 24-hour shifts.
Maybe it's changed now?
Anymore. Maybe it's changed.
I hope.
Yeah. But the first 10 years that I did anesthesia, often on 24-hour shifts. So my cortisol levels were just through the roof.
Well, yeah, you don't want to make a mistake. Someone's life is hanging in the balance.
Yes. Okay. I was always on edge and I was always nervous. Even when I was very confident in my skills, you just never know. Things can happen.
Yes.
So my progesterone, because when your cortisol is high, so there's pregnenolone, which is this kind of parent and mother hormone. And pregnenolone goes into progesterone and progesterone turns into other hormones. But also pregnenolone can go into cortisol. So if you have this mother hormone that you have so much cortisol that your body's needing to make to keep you alive and awake, and it's taking the pregnenolone over here. So there's not much left to come over here. So then you're not having very much of the progesterone. Well, progesterone is the natural Valium.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
So my natural Valium was low. And so I was wondering why I was so high anxiety all the time, stressed, panic attacks.
Oh, my gosh. So the cortisol is coming from the same place as progesterone. So people who are just living in a high stress state, even if you're not doing all those other things, if you're still like on that train of constant cortisol, you're channeling away from what you need for progesterone.
Yeah.
So then that's going to put you into what? Early menopause or?
Well, it's just going to increase your anxiety, right? Because you're stealing from these other hormones to make cortisol.
Wow.
And so because we need cholesterol, because cholesterol is what our hormones are made out of. So it's cholesterol and then pregnenolone, and then pregnenolone goes to these other cascades. But yeah, if you're making lots of cortisol.
Yeah, sorry. We may have to review that. Okay.
No, yeah, that's the interesting thing about our stressful lives that we live today is so much of us are living on cortisol that we're messing up our other hormones, and we don't do it intentionally. We don't mean to, right?
Right.
So that's why early in my life, I was very volatile. And some of the symptoms of, well, I had estrogen dominance because my progesterone was lower relatively than my estrogen. So estrogen dominance, you could have symptoms like PMS, weight gain around the middle, breast tenderness, irritability, heavy periods, lots of cramps. That's estrogen dominance. Well, part of perimenopause is that now our ovaries are getting tired. They're getting close to wanting to retire. So they're cutting back to half time and then maybe fourth time. So all of our hormone levels are getting lower. But as we're getting lower, what's happening is that oftentimes because of our diet, from sugar, from stress, all these things, our estrogen level is higher relatively than our progesterone. So that's when we've got that. We don't have as much progesterone. We don't have as much anything, but we still have more estrogen in a in a ratio.
What are normal levels?
Oh, you got me there. You have to ask my husband.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And it depends, too, whether you're doing the drying urine or are you doing the blood.
Okay. Okay.
And for estrogen, it fluctuates all over the place related to your cycle, too.
Oh, of course.
And testosterone is interesting because when I first had mine drawn, mine was so low that it was not on the level.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it went down to 12. So I had pretty much no testosterone. Normal lab tests will say, like, if you're a woman and you have a level of 50, that's, you know, oh, that's totally normal. You're perfectly normal.
Sounds low.
I run mine more around 100, 150 because I do pellets. And I feel really optimized there. And my brain works better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not as grouchy. My husband's not so annoying. So, again, everybody's different. And so I think that's why it's important to do your hormones early so that you can just see, well, what's my testosterone normally? What does it run? So it's good to know.
That's a really good key.
It is good
to
know that. But for me, since I didn't know it, we just slowly supplemented myself until we got me to a place where I felt more normal.
Yeah.
And then we're like, okay, let's just hang me out there for a little bit.
How did you start studying this then?
When I started trying to figure out what was going on with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I had overcome a lot of anger and rage from my earlier life. And I worked really, really hard to overcome that and to become a more calm person and to not just blow up and throw this huge, giant fit in public. And I started noticing that I was becoming more irritable again. Like, my husband was breathing and I was like, oh my God, can you stop? And he's like, stop what? I'm like, you're breathing.
Oh, shit. Justin's breathing was just annoying me yesterday.
Yeah.
Sorry, honey.
Or chewing or swallowing or, I don't know, existing.
Yeah.
You know, I just find myself so annoyed.
My teenagers feel that way.
Oh, that's yeah. Normal. Well, hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Hormones.
Ooh.
Yeah. Their hormones are all over the place. It's like we get to go through, you know, adolescence all over again.
Shit. All right.
In rehearse. So, yeah, the mood swings and everything. So I started realizing that I was really irritable again, and I just wanted to pinch everybody's little heads off. And in traffic, I would lose my shit. Somebody would maybe just kind of cut me off a little bit, and I would be screaming and, you know, gesturing wildly with the middle finger. And
wow.
I had these.
That's intense.
I hate to admit this. This sounds really terrible.
Admit it.
No,
it's just us here.
I would have these flashes of pulling in front of them and, like, stopping so that they couldn't get out and cutting them off, opening their car door, dragging them out and smashing their head into the pavement.
Okay, you were
I've never done that.
No, it was a fantasy though. Okay, yeah, so that's intense.
I would picture that in my mind, and I was like, okay, I don't think this is normal. Yeah. Violent fantasies of hurting people?
Yeah. Like, what's going on?
So, yeah. That started freaking me out. Mm-hmm. So I just started trying to figure out what Good was for you. Wrong with me.
And healthy way of dealing with that.
Yeah. Yes. And so as I just started reading all these books and stuff, I just started discovering that there was a woman who actually, her defense in a murder trial of her husband was menopause. And it actually worked. Not saying ladies to ever do that. Please do not murder your significant other. But, and you're probably not going to get away with it. But
yeah. Did she get off?
She did. She did.
Oh.
She was having such severe, these little flashes of rage. And
it's really sad.
Yeah, it's really, really sad. Because she loved him. And she was really sad afterwards that she'd done that. So,
My God.
Perimenopause can really affect us so greatly with all these hormonal fluctuations. Our bandwidth of dealing with things can really shrink down. And you think about women here in America today with a lot of our responsibilities.
Yeah.
Family, jobs, all the things that we're trying to juggle. And if we're not taking time for ourselves to take care of ourselves, that cortisol is just constantly over here, increasing our inflammation, taking away from our progesterone. The falling in testosterone is giving us more fatigue. It's harder to make muscle. So then muscles are metabolically active. So that keeps our metabolism up. Well, as our muscle mass goes down, our metabolism starts to come down. We need that muscle to keep our bones strong, to keep us healthy. As the testosterone is declining, we tend to get more of that brain fog, which also can be estrogen as well and progesterone. Declining levels of testosterone can lead to irritability. It can lead to more pain in your body. Testosterone actually is somewhat a sedative for pain. So if someone has pain, chronic pain, oftentimes they'll be supplemented with some testosterone to help them deal with a pain.
Wow.
And so as those levels are coming down, our ability to deal with the pains that happen as we're getting older decrease, our energy levels are falling. Estrogen, well, the progesterone, we talked about that. As the progesterone comes down, then we have more anxiety, more anxious thoughts, decreased ability to deal with the things that come at us in life.
More reactionary.
Yes, yes, instead of being steady and stable. And then as our estrogen is fluctuating, one day our estrogen might be really high. And so we're weepy and we're moody and our breasts are sore and tender and we don't know what's happening. And then the next day our estrogen level's really low. So then you can have vaginal dryness. You can have decreased libido, which can also come from decreased progesterone and decreased testosterone. So you have all this hormonal soup that's doing all these interesting things all the way through perimenopause. Once you hit menopause, the ovaries are like, we're done. Store's closed. Shut the door, turn off the lights. And mine did that for about 4 or 5 months. And then they decided.
And you were like, this is it.
I was like, okay, all right.
Here we are.
Yeah, here we are. Mm-hmm. We're in it. That's fine. And then they were like, no, turn on the lights. Just do a little bit of stuff for a couple months. And then they're like, maybe we're going to turn off the lights again. So it's red in that little last phase.
Okay.
But eventually when they fully retire, then the ovaries are not producing hormones anymore. So your hormones that you get are coming from your adrenal glands. Mm-hmm. And they make much less of hormones, sex hormones, than our ovaries did. Mm-hmm. But it becomes a new normal where now you're no longer having this estrogen and progesterone and testosterone roller coaster. Everything is just here. And it's lower. But it becomes steady. And so then your body's like, okay, this is a new normal. I can get used to this. And so over time, it gets used to it. Mm-hmm. It can. For me, I am not going down without a fight.
This podcast is sponsored by Wands. Wands creates luxurious pleasure practice tools that help people become more connected to their bodies. They have a huge selection of incredible items like yoni eggs, the most gorgeous crystal pleasure wands you've ever seen, free bleed blankets, and my favorites, the trademarked glass cervix wand and the Venus wand, which is their heaviest wand made of stainless steel, and their new ecstatic vibrator. This company is woman-owned and creates products designed to help you become more connected to your body and your pleasure and support the healing of pelvic pain. Get yours today in their always discreet packaging at wands.com. That's wands with two A's, WAANDS.com. And use my link in the show notes to get 10% off or enter the code Amy Edwards at checkout. Again, that's wands, WAANDS.com. The Amy Edwards Show is sponsored in part by Higher Dose. Higher Dose creates wellness tech for everyone with tools, supplements, and body care. And I have 15% off for you with my code MAGIC15. Higher Dose has been featured in Goop, Glamour, Elle, Vogue, Bazaar, Allure, and more. I have their infrared pulsed electromagnetic field, or PEMF, mat, which emits electromagnetic waves that mimic natural frequencies found in nature, stimulating and encouraging your body's natural recovery process. It also has 20 pounds of crystals in it and has shown to ease chronic pain, aid in exercise recovery and circulation, deepen your meditations, reduce stress, and improve total body relaxation. I also love their red light face mask. It stimulates collagen, reduces fine lines, regenerates cells, and it's soft and easy to use in store and even travel with. I'm a true fan of these items and more, like their glow serum. So I'm excited to offer you 15% off using my code MAGIC15. Go to the show notes. You can click through on the link right there. Or if you go to Higher Dose, just enter the code MAGIC15 for 15% off. HigherDose.com. This podcast is sponsored by The Collective ATX. If you're looking for the best in hair extensions, it's The Collective ATX. They do mine, and I won't go anywhere else. I've tried them all over the years, and finally, I've found what makes my real hair stronger and fuller, and even works with my natural curl. They keep all their extensions in-house, so there's no wait, and they specialize in no damage to your natural hair like traditional hair extension methods. Plus, they're pros at color and covering gray. I have literally never in my life been happier with my color. They were named a top 200 salon by Salon Today in 2023. They've changed my hair journey. Let them change yours. The Collective ATX, link is in the show notes. Were you on birth control through some of this? Personally, I'll just throw mine in there and you can talk about yours too and maybe mine. I had an IUD after my first child at 32 or 33, got an IUD, got that out, had my second child, got another IUD, kept that from age 36 or 7 until age 49. And I was looking at 48 maybe. And I was like, you know, it was the Mirena. Mm-hmm. And so I had one and then another. And so it was localized hormones. And I just am saying this for anybody that has an IUD or is using birth control extensively. Like, you know, I was really suddenly like, I feel so out of touch with my hormones. I don't feel like I'm getting an accurate reading if I'm doing Ways to Well. And so I was like, I want to get it out. So I did. Mm-hmm. I got it out. Justin got a vasectomy. Sorry, honey. I don't know if you want everyone to know that, but he did.
But they do.
And so, yeah. So then, you know, I just wanted to give my body time because my IUD, I didn't even have a period.
Right.
Like nothing, yeah. Which was great in a lot of ways. But, and I never had heavy periods anyway, but I still experienced some symptoms though. Mm-hmm. Like I still would go through phases of intense chest sweats. That's where I get it. It's like right here. Yeah. And so anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there. Like I've been trying to level mine out in the last few years to at least find a baseline because I felt like I didn't even have any accuracy.
It's true. When you have birth control. So I wasn't on birth control until I was probably, I got married at 21 and I started birth control. I'd had some depression, you know, as an adolescent, had mm-hmm. overcome that, was fine. And then I got on the birth control and just threw me into this deep, deep, dark depression many years.
There was one in the day called 777. It was like different levels. Yeah. And my friend used to call it 666 because she was like, it just made me like evil. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I was on that. And
yeah, you were. You remember 777.
I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Back in the day, you know, they didn't tell you when you got on a birth control that it could really mess up your hormones, that it could actually change the way that you interact with your loved one.
Yeah. I feel like it was like word of mouth. Like we just talked about it. We didn't have like anybody telling us that. Instead, exactly. It was like my friend saying 666 and I was like, oh shit, well maybe I should pay attention or not take that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, it's so, I don't know if you've heard that birth control changes the way that you smell your significant other.
I have heard that.
So it can destroy marriages because say that you've been on birth control and it changes the way you smell and then you get off and you no longer find the pheromones of your spouse attractive anymore.
How scary is that?
It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of years after you get off the birth control for your hormones to level because what it is it's a fake estrogen. It's not estrogen like our body normally has, even though it's a small amount, but it's overriding your normal estrogen of your body because it's this little fake estrogen that's always there. And so your body's like, oh, well, whatever. We don't need to make anything because we already have it. Or it could be fake progestin, which the synthetic progestin is the one that has more side effects than, say, I take progesterone, which is bioidentical, and I love it, and it has all these great effects. But
how do you take it?
Orally.
Orally, okay.
Normally, most hormones I don't like orally except for progesterone.
Okay.
Totally fine orally, but testosterone and estrogen, I don't like them orally because anything you take through the mouth, your liver has to process it first. And you don't want your liver to have to be processing this estrogen and then it breaks it down. So anyway, there are other ways to get estrogen with like creams or troches that go under the tongue because then it absorbs it to the bloodstream. Or you can do pellets.
Okay.
Things like that.
Cool. Where were we? We were talking about birth control.
Oh, yeah. Birth control. And where I was kind of going with that is that I had worked really hard to overcome my anger and my rage. And then lovely perimenopause raises its head. And so then I have the anger and the rage again, and I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
You got on birth control and then how long did you stay on it?
From about 21 until probably 33.
Okay. And then you were
actually, that's not true. Probably 33, yeah. Because after our deal was, after the third child, is that my husband would have a vasectomy.
Okay, cool.
I didn't have to be on birth control anymore.
Okay. So then you're birth control free and you're able to at least get some sort of baseline.
Starts to level out. And then after that is kind of when, during that level out phase, where I was like, oh, I feel like, I'm kind of steady. Like, I'm not a crazy person.
I have a quick question. Mm-hmm. Hold that thought. If people are getting tested in their 20s, let's say, and getting a baseline, then is it accurate if they're on birth control or do they just need to take that into account?
So it's just good to know what their levels are even on the birth control.
Okay.
Because it probably won't affect their testosterone levels. But yeah, it could affect the estrogen levels or the progesterone if they're on a birth control. But it's still not going to hurt just to at least have an idea.
Yeah.
A little snapshot of what's going on.
Okay, good. Okay. Okay, so here you are. You're thinking things are
great.
Oh, this is good. I'm in my mid-30s. Yes.
And all of a sudden now I'm having these terrifying thoughts of hurting people, which is how I started diving into reading every book I could get my hands on menopause and perimenopause. And just that journey has been like, oh, wow. How come I didn't know about this?
No one's talking. No one was talking.
No one was talking about
it. Right.
Yes.
Like, my mom has passed away. I don't even know.
Yeah.
How much. What happened? I have no clue what hers, my grandmother's. I have no basis for any family anything.
Isn't that so interesting? Yeah. I mean, you think of women going through this. Why didn't they talk about it? But back then, it wasn't allowed. You just didn't complain. You just kept it all to yourself. Mm-hmm. And you just, if you went to the doctor, they would put you on a Valium. And that's it.
Yeah.
And women would live out the rest of their lives being drugged, when there were so many other things that could happen. It wasn't that they were crazy. It's their progesterone levels were low and all their hormones were doing crazy things. And they weren't allowed to talk about it because doctors would say, oh, you're hysterical. or mm-hmm. people would just say, oh, well, that's just women, they're so emotional. And I'm like, okay, that's BS. We're half this planet, right? Half the population of the planet are women. We are equally as valuable. We're just as necessary. And there's more ways to live than just this male patriarchal way of living. Suck your emotions down. Be at the job. Don't show whether you're happy or anger's fine, but, you know, no crying. And
I like your patriarch accent. Yeah, it's good. It's good. No, it fits.
I have strong feelings about patriarchy.
Yeah, me too.
So what I want is for it to become normal to talk about our experience. Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, you're a man. Your hormones are steady like this. And later on in life, they do go through a little bit of manopause. But for the most part, they're like just this way. We are not. We are this way. We cycle with the moon. You know, we have phases. That's normal. That's fine. It's not to be, we shouldn't be ashamed of that. And as the more we talk about it, the more we can be accepted in the workplace for like, oh, well, she's just being hormonal again, or she's crying or whatever. Like, no, let's be more understanding of each other and let's open it up to all human experiences. Mm-hmm. I actually left working at our med spa year and a half ago because the hormonal symptoms were so bad. And you know, when you're injecting people's faces with needles and things, you have to be nice. And I wanted to be. I love my patients. I love connecting with them, and I love their faces a canvas and making them beautiful. But it was like maybe having 8 or 10 patients coming in, and if there's someone I didn't know and they're haggling with me about, you know, I bought 20 units of Botox and that's what all I want, but I want you to treat my whole entire face. And, you know, just arguing with them about trying to educate them about mm-hmm. 20 units. You can't spread it all over your whole entire face because what's happened, it's not really going to work. And then you're not going to be happy, but you're going to be mad at me and blah, blah, blah. And I just didn't have the bandwidth mm-hmm. to educate and re-educate over and over again, 8 times a day for new patients who didn't know me, who didn't trust me. And I get that. They didn't know me. They didn't trust me yet. But I didn't have the bandwidth to have that patience for them. And so it just sucked my will to live. Mm-hmm. And then I'd gone on vacation and came back. Someone in our office had moved all the furniture and moved my office. And God bless them. They were doing something beautiful and wonderful. It's just I didn't know about it. And so I came back from vacation. My whole office is different. My office that I sit in is now at the back.
Did you start crying?
I started crying. And so I was trying to walk away. And the person was following me, trying to talk to me.
They
wanted me to be happy about how much work they had done. But when you're perimenopausal, and these emotions are so strong, I didn't want to just start bawling in front of her. So I'm trying to walk away and she's following me. So I go into the bathroom and I just start crying. And then I come out and I walk into this room where I had just decorated before I left. And I put pictures of Marilyn Monroe. I hadn't finished decorating yet because I had another couple pictures. Well, everything was changed and moved. Not a big deal, right? In the grand scheme of things. But I took it personally in my little perimenopausal self that I decorated this room and now they changed it as soon as I left. So they don't like me. They think I'm a terrible decorator. Oh my God. Sure. They don't respect me. Like, you know, you go down
everything
this rabbit trail of things. And so then it went from weeping to this lighting a fuse that lit off this dynamite of anger. And I'm in the room like cussing up a storm. My husband walks by and he goes, oh my God, what is wrong with you? Well, I probably better not say all the things because every word. He was like, maybe you better get yourself together because we were having a staff meeting. So I tried to get myself together and come and participate in the staff meeting, but then I started crying again. And so I moved over here. Anyway, it was a whole thing. Mm-hmm. People noticed that I was acting weird and that I was crying. And I just said, you know, I'm going to stop doing this job. And I did. I left. And, it was a blessing in a way because that was not my path anymore. And I knew that I was being pulled into biohacking or whatever you want to call it, to serve people, to teach them how to take care of themselves, how to be healthy, how to provide
that inside out
technologies. Yes, to be healthy from the inside out. And the med spa was beautiful. It's still beautiful. Everyone that works there is beautiful. It was just my journey of trying to get a hold of these emotions that I didn't understand. I didn't know what was wrong with me. They didn't understand what was wrong with me. I was hard to work with. I was trying so hard to stuff it. And it just was, it took more energy than I had at the time to stuff all those emotions and stuff that anxiety. And sometimes I'd be injecting someone and I would get a panic attack of like, oh my God, what if I drop their brow? In 10 years of injecting, I've only dropped one person's brow ever. And if you inject long enough and enough, you are going to drop someone's brow. It can happen where the Botox kind of makes their eyebrow droop or their eyelid droop. It's not the end of the world. It wears off. You can do drops, but people aren't happy. They've paid money and now they look a little stoned.
Absolutely,
you know, it's not optimal. But I would start having these random paranoid panic attacks that I was going to drop their brow.
Just that fear rising up, right?
Yeah, that it wasn't going to be perfect or their lips weren't going to be perfect. I was like, I've been doing this for years. Why now am I freaking out? I mean, I put people to sleep. You know, I did open heart surgery, anesthesia for it.
After being awake for 24 hours.
Yeah. And now I'm freaking out about sticking a little bit of Botox in somebody.
Right.
So what I want women to know is give yourself grace and love and mercy. Maybe you do need to change careers. If you're in the midst of that, if your career is no longer serving you, maybe you need to cut back to part-time. Whatever it is, find out what you need to serve yourself and to love yourself. And don't be harsh. And let other people know what's going on. Don't be embarrassed to say, you know, I'm going through some hormonal changes here, you guys, and I'm having a hard time of it. Like, sometimes I'm angry, sometimes I'm crying. You know, I'm really having a hard time. But we're afraid to tell people that, right? Because we're afraid we might get fired or passed over for that promotion or, it's a hard place to be because, you might get passed over for your promotion if you admit that. But if half of us in the world start talking about our experiences and we band together women and start sticking by each other instead of stabbing each other in the back. Oh, well, Sally was such a Karen today. I'm like, did you hear her? She just snapped at me and I was like, she bit my head off. Oh my God. No, stop. Do you know what she's going through? Let's stop being bitches to each other. We have enough trouble from the men out there. And I'm not a man basher. I love men. I really do. But we have enough trouble with the patriarchy. So let's have each other's back, sisters. Let's stop stabbing each other in the back. Let's stop being judgy. Let's stop jumping to conclusions. You know, maybe Sally, who was a Karen that day, you don't know, maybe her teenage daughter told her that morning, I hate you. Or maybe she's perimenopausal. Who knows? Let's stop being so damn judgy. Let's have a heart and love each other. Because life is hard enough, but when you start going through perimenopause, oh, hell.
It's
never a dull moment.
Yeah, it's about that remembering too. Like, you know, I try to think back to when my mom was dying and stuff and I did some dumb things driving in traffic, you know, and I try to teach my girls this and I'm like, when you see somebody doing something, I'm like, maybe their mom's dying. Like, really, like it just gives me that instant like grace toward them, you know?
Yeah.
But what you were saying too, you know, we're told by society too, you know, like that there's that fear of... Am I still even worthy as an older woman? Because I think that society has told us we're not in so many ways that it gets scary, you know, then you're like, oh, you automatically are like, if I drop a brow, then I'm not good at my job and I'm disposable because I'm getting older. You know, like, I mean, like, it's like this little like tailspin of just one tiny needle turns into your entire life, right? So I think that when we talk about menopause and perimenopause, it's a bigger discussion into your own self-worth, which is what you're getting to, right? Like it's your own self-worth and it's your own happiness and it's your own, like, am I still a viable human being?
That has been a challenge for me. I didn't think it would because I've always said, I mean, as early as I can remember, I always said I was going to live to be 100. And it's funny, my great-grandmother lived to be 100. My granny almost made it. But even before I knew my great-grandmother was going to live to be that old, I just always knew that I was going to live to be really old. Now I'm going to live to be 120, 150. But anyway, even as a kid, 100 years. I don't know where I was going with that, with living old. Oh, so I loved old people. And I would go in high school and I would volunteer at the nursing home and I would talk to the old people and bring them magazines and stuff. So I loved old people and I respected them. So I didn't think I would have a hard time. Didn't know really anything about perimenopause. I knew menopause was, oh, you stopped having your period.
Yeah, nobody, perimenopause, I'd say in the last 10 years, really had, had a breakout moment.
Like, oh, yeah. And so I never thought about perimenopause, the menopause part. All I ever thought about was, oh, yay. Yay, I'll stop having a period. How nice is that?
Mm-hmm.
That's all I ever thought about it. So as I've gone through this journey now, I started questioning everything about myself. When I look in the mirror, I'll go, what are these? Ooh. Oh my God. These are, oh, you know, and what are these? Oh my God. These are terrible. These are, and my husband is like, shut up. in the nicest way.
No, I get
teasing it. Me. Because I'm over, he's over here at his mirror and I'm over here in my mirror and I'm like, oh, what is this? I have a beard. Oh my God. Where did this beard mustache thing come from? I was like, the indignities. As if getting older wasn't bad enough. As if having this brain fog wasn't bad enough, as if drying up in certain places, all these things is not bad enough. Getting facial hair, like the indignities. Okay, fine. I have a razor. I have tweezers. Just use them. Mm-hmm. And I do. And so I keep some in my car because, you know, when you're driving and the sun is shining on you and you look in the rearview mirror and you go,
well aware.
What is that?
Yeah.
So just have the little tweezers. And I tell my whole family, please feel free, if you ever see some goony goo goo hairs hanging out of me, just tell me so that I can go pluck them.
My daughters are fully informed that if I am in a coma, you pluck everything. They have excellent eyesight. Yes. I'm like, I can't see anyway. Yes. Oh, they know.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So I think that's something important, too, is that I didn't know that was going to happen. I'm like, oh, my gosh. You know? So what happens?
But talking about it.
Talking about it. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so what happens to your skin? After about age 20, 1% every year decrease in collagen production. So already we're having this decreased collagen production. Say that
Is that for men too?
That's for men too.
Great.
But their testosterone causes it
level that to playing produce, field.
They produce a lot more sebum, which is the oil that keeps their skin more oiled. And so their skin tends to dry out less and their skin is thicker as well. And so they tend to get less wrinkles. But they still do lose the collagen. So mm-hmm. already, say if you were from 20 to 60, you've lost 40% of your collagen production already. And then when you hit menopause, it tanks because your estrogen goes down. Estrogen is necessary for collagen production. So when our estrogen goes down, we lose another huge percent of our... So that was another thing that I noticed. I'm going along and I'm totally happy. And then one day, it was my birthday, and I don't know if it was 45, 48, I don't know. But I look in the mirror, and I go, oh, who is that? Oh, my God. What happened to this? And I start crying, and my husband's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, my face. What has happened to my face? Who knows if it was psychological from the fact that it was my birthday.
Totally.
But also, too, like, my estrogen, I guess, had been declining, and so then my face started falling. And that was the first time at 45, 48 that I had ever gone to a med spa. And
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Way to hold out, Natalie.
I was a big hippie. So I used to say, oh, I'll never do Botox. That's a toxin. I'll never do that. And filler.
Never say never.
Never say never. Yeah.
Mm-mm.
So I started using really great skincare products because I used to just use Dove soap and coconut oil.
Hmm.
Well, what happens is all that dead skin starts piling up. Because your skin is turning over much slower, and so then it just kind of hangs out and it doesn't fall off, and all this dead skin is collecting on the top. So it looks very, you know, the texture is yucky and it's mm-hmm. dull. And so I learned about retinol, which I am a big fan of. I learned about hyaluronic acid, which I'm a big fan of, and mm-hmm. collagen. And so it helped my skin. So I didn't do anything probably for another 5 years, and then I started doing Botox on myself when we opened the med spas. And so I do that here and there. I know in the biopacking community that's, you know, some people are really totally against that. I'm like, that's a decision that each person
against
has
what? Botox?
Botox.
Oh.
And filler. But I'm like, each person No judgment. Let's stop judging each other. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let each person do the research for themselves to see what are the possible risks and are you willing to take those risks? I've studied extensively on Botox and the risks for most people are extremely low. So for myself, I've decided that sometimes I will, because I used to have this chronic mad line here and then I really frowned all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I first used Botox here and here to relax those DAOs so that I wasn't frowning all the time. And now I don't have to do it because I broke the habit of frowning.
Nice.
And I don't have to do it very often up here either because I broke the habit of looking mad.
Mm-hmm.
But
one of the things I noticed about Botox that I've kind of broken the habit of is that I held a lot of tension in my forehead and I didn't realize it. Mm-hmm. And when I started getting it, it just helped me release that tension.
Yes.
And now I don't hold as much in there. And like, so sometimes you get a benefit like that that surprises you.
Mm-hmm. I actually found that when I started doing that, I used to have severe, severe migraines. I don't too much anymore because I changed my diet.
Mm-hmm.
But getting the Botox actually started help to relieve my migraines because migraines, you know, are a lot of tension in the forehead, a lot of tension in the muscle here and across the top of the head. But even without getting Botox here, it really did help by releasing
that
tension.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah. So, I mean, you know what? I don't know. I just don't judge anybody for anything they do. I'm like, whatever. I say that. I probably judge somewhere, but I try not to.
Yes.
Like, because I don't really want to be judged.
Me too.
And I don't want to judge myself. That's some toxic shit right there. So the more we can let that go.
Yeah.
So when we're talking, let's get back to perimenopause and menopause. What can people do? Let's say you don't know your hormone levels.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you feel overwhelmed with life and you're taking care of kids and you're doing all the shit. And you're like, I just don't have time for that. Mm-hmm. What can they do? Like, is it meditation, exercise, walking? Like, what are some just really basic steps that any woman or anyone experiencing menopause or perimenopause could start doing?
Yes. So all the things you mentioned, perfect. I know we're all busy, but I think we're too busy to not meditate because when we meditate, it helps to center you, right? And I find when I meditate, I get more done during the day. I'm more calm. I'm less fragmented. So I do believe that every person, regardless of gender, should meditate.
Yeah.
I don't want to say should. I don't want to should anyone.
No.
But it's
can benefit from.
Can benefit from meditation. And meditation can be all sorts of things.
Yeah.
You know, you have Mind Valley, you have Brain Tap, you have all sorts of meditation apps that you can use.
You got dishes you can do.
Exactly. I have
at least I do.
I sit outside. I have a tree and I sit outside and I put my feet on the tree and I just.
Oh, that's nice.
Time with the tree. Just close my eyes.
I was just admiring trees today, as a matter
trees
of fact.
Are beautiful.
Yes, they are.
Yes. So meditation or talking to your trees, your plants, whatever, that's really good because that is just giving your body time to let that cortisol level come down, to center yourself and to really just let the little hamster get off the wheel and take a little bitty nap.
And redirect that pregnenolone.
The pregnenolone. Yeah.
Pregnenolone. Sorry, I tried.
Yes. You're right. Instead of being over here in the cortisol, it's bringing
that's
it down
right
to the progesterone, the happy, relaxing hormone. The other thing, too, walking is good because you can kind of just get into this little, almost like a walking meditation. You're moving. Movement is very good. It moves all the blood and the chi and the energy. Being when we're walking, we're usually outside at least, you know, getting exposed to maybe some nature, some grass, all that. That's really good for you. Diet is really important. If someone out there is struggling and they don't want to get their hormones done and they aren't ready yet for anything else, give up sugar.
Okay.
And I know that for some people that sounds like completely impossible task. It's not. It once you, I suggest the like the done, like the 30-day reset, like nothing that tastes sweet in your mouth whatsoever, not even sweetener in your coffee, like to retrain your palate. And
I always talk about just trying things as an experiment. You don't have to do it forever.
Exactly.
But even if you can just try it as an experiment, even just one day, like give yourself, just try it. And if you make it through a day, maybe make it through two, maybe make it through a week, and maybe make it through four.
Yeah.
And it's like just trying those experiments to see. Like I'm almost 2 years alcohol-free. I've had one glass of wine, but under pressure. But, you know, I'm just considering it an experiment. It doesn't have to be a full lifestyle change.
Exactly.
But, you know, I like that suggestion because it's just actionable in a small step and just your normal life.
Yes.
It seems hard, but you can do it.
Yes. And mm-hmm. if you understand how important that it is, we talked about in the sugar episode, that sugar increases your insulin. Insulin affects every hormone in your body, especially your female hormones. So if you're eating sugar, you're eating carbs, you're going to have a higher insulin. When you have that higher insulin, that insulin is going to affect all of your hormones, including your female hormones. And so you're going to have this cascade.
That is fascinating.
It's fascinating. And so a huge part of today and the way women experience perimenopause today, I believe, is the way we eat and our stress.
Yeah.
Those two things, stress and diet. So if you can only do two things, find some sort of meditative practice that works for you. There's all sorts of things, maybe just reading poetry, whatever. And cut back on your sugar. And I love how you say, just, you know, say, okay, I'm going to do it for a week.
Yeah.
You know? And just look at it as a game. I'm going to challenge myself. It's going to be so fun. And I'm going to give myself a reward. Pick a non-food reward for yourself, though, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do one whole week without eating anything sweet. And I know I'm going to miss the sweets and I'm going to know I'm going to crave it. But I know myself. I know I'm strong. I know I can do anything for 1 week. And I'm going to buy myself that. Those pair of shoes.
Yeah.
At the end of the week for meeting my goal to reward mm-hmm. myself and show myself what a badass I am. And you get to that week and you buy yourself the shoes and you look at your hot pink little heels and you're like, oh, this is so cool. You know what? I bet I can do this another week.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Just, it's an adventure. Try it. And as you do that, you're going to let your hormones come back down into a more steady state. And it's going to be amazing how it will affect you. And then I'm also a big proponent for intermittent fasting mm-hmm. because that allows that insulin level to fall down to normal. Because normally we eat a meal, the insulin comes up, the insulin takes a long time to come back down to baseline. And by that time, we're already eating again. So we haven't had time for our hormones to come back into regulation. We haven't had time for our body to access our fat stores to pull out fat so that we can mm-hmm. lose that. And as we're in perimenopause, already with the estrogen and all the different estrogen dominance and the hormones doing crazy things, we start to gain weight and put the fat around the middle. And so if you want to get that fat gone, you need to get that insulin level to come down to baseline for a bit. So intermittent fasting is a great way to do that so that your insulin comes down to here. And now that your insulin's here, now is when we can start accessing those fat stores. If you're eating every 2 hours and you're doing CrossFit and you're doing this, that, and the other, you're stressing out your body. You're actually producing more cortisol because your body can't access the fat. And you're making that cortisol, which cortisol then makes you store more fat mm-hmm. into the cells. Makes your blood sugar go up, and then you've got extra blood sugar which being in the cell. So it's just this, you're fighting yourself. So
what does that look like time-wise if you're talking about intermittent fasting for a woman?
So everybody's different, and you can mm-hmm. start just really small. Say that you are very addicted to your breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you're terrified of that. Okay, so normally what time? If you eat breakfast at 8, tell yourself, okay, I'm just going to eat breakfast at 9 today.
Mm-hmm.
And so then whatever time you stopped eating at night, say you stopped eating, I'm a big proponent of no food whatsoever for 3 hours before you go to bed.
Oh.
Because it's going to mess up your sleep because your body's digesting. Mm-hmm. And so it's using energy to digest instead of cleaning your brain.
Yeah, I do better when I stop eating at 6 p.m. Yes. I just don't always do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we're not perfect. We don't have to be perfect. But say your normal rule is, okay, I'm not going to eat anything after 7 p.m. And then from 7 p.m. until 7 a.m., that's 12 hours, right, that mm-hmm. you've fasted. And then 13 hours if you eat at 8, but you go, okay, I'm just going to bump it to 14 hours. I'm going to eat breakfast at 9.
Mm-hmm.
What a beautiful thing you've done for yourself. You've given yourself 14 hours to let your body rest, to let your insulin levels come down, to not have to digest. You've done a great thing. Do that for a week. If you're like, yeah, this is cool. Now I'm going to bump it to 10.
Mm-hmm.
So then you bump it to 10. So now that's 15 hours. Then you bump it to 11. That's 16 hours. Then you go, well, lunch is right there. So I'm just going to wait till lunch. There you go. that is a great place to start. Now, after you've been intermittent fasting later on, a woman who's perimenopausal might want to explore doing even longer fasts, maybe OMAD, one meal a day. I'm not a proponent of always intermittent fasting the exact same time, the exact same way, or for women doing extended periods of fasting, because that will increase our cortisol, and then we're fighting against that cortisol. But it's a great place to try. Just do that little 9 and then 10 and then 11. Well, lunch is right there. Okay, lunch. And what I found is I didn't think I could do it because I was that Q2-hour feeds where I had to be fed every 2 hours or I was going to bite somebody's head off. I started eating more protein and less carbs. And then I realized, oh, protein and fat, it's totally fine. Also, Dave Asprey's trick, the butter in your coffee. So if you have, it depends on who you read. Some people say, oh, fasting is fasting, nothing but water. There are studies, though, that if you have your coffee and you have butter in the coffee, no protein, just butter, just fat, that you still are in ketosis, so your body is still resting, you're still doing autophagy, you're doing the good things that you, why you're fasting anyway, but the fat in your coffee, the butter in your coffee is keeping you from being hungry, and it's helping your brain to be fueled with the fat. And so that's what I started doing, and I just do butter in my coffee, and then now I feel much better doing that intermittent fasting. And I will still try to cause myself to eat breakfast 2 to 3 times a week just to mix it up a little bit. Or sometimes I'll eat breakfast and lunch and then not dinner. But I have found that helped me lose 12 pounds that I just could not seem to get rid of. No matter what I did, I couldn't lose them. And then they started creeping up. And I was like, oh, hell no. What is up with this? And I hadn't changed anything in my life. It's just that, you know, like the weight's creeping up, creeping up. And so I tried intermittent fasting and I was like, oh, miraculous for me.
Okay. Good to know. Yeah. I like doing that. I just, I don't think that I've been as conscious about it as I could be and intentional.
Yeah.
You know, so, because sometimes I'll just like to eat a big meal around like 2 or 3 in the afternoon and then, you know, that's that.
That's fine.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah. So, all right, cool. Can you believe we've been talking for an hour about this?
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that crazy? I looked at it a little while ago and like, it was like 48 minutes and I was like, what?
There's just so much to talk about in perimenopause.
What did we miss? What did we, what do we need to address before we sign off on this for episode?
There's a lot. There's a lot. There's so much that I don't think we can just, you know, get it all in one little episode.
I know.
But I would tell women the number one thing is love yourself, be kind to yourself, don't judge yourself, and then turn that out for other women. Love other women, be kind to other women, don't judge other women. We do not know what people are going through. So start out with self-love. Let that self-love go out to other people, because if we can become less judgmental as a society, if we can become less judgmental as women and love each other and support each other, we'll make this whole perimenopausal journey so much easier. And then talk about it. Talk about what you're going through. Now, there are Facebook groups out there that I was a part of, and really, it was just a big giant bitch session. And I get it. I get it. When you are having these terrible things happening to you and you don't understand and you're confused and you're lost, you need to let it out. You need to vent. I get that. But it's just that if all it was woman after woman after woman after woman after woman complaining, 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 and there was nothing constructive being given, that I felt was not super useful, because it's like, yeah, it's good to get it out. And that's why I think we need to share and get it out. But then also, instead of always focusing on the negative, let's also look for the positive. Like, here's what I love about perimenopause. Perimenopause forced me to cut out from my life things that were not serving me, because I no longer had the bandwidth for it. Before perimenopause, I wanted to make sure everybody was happy. I wanted to please everybody. I wanted everybody to love me. I wanted everybody to like me. And I would do whatever I had to. I would jump through my ass to make you like me. I would come and inject you on a 7 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday to make you like me, to work for your schedule. And perimenopause, God bless its little soul, it has made me where I don't have the bandwidth for that anymore. And so I'm like, no, that doesn't work for me. This job anymore, that's not serving me anymore. this friend over here, I'm sorry, sister, but you're a taker. You don't work for me anymore. And so look for the blessing in perimenopause, because there are tons of blessings when you actually look, even though it's a roller coaster and it can be a little bit of hell. It also, it's
such is life.
Yes.
Such is life. And I love that we're ending pointing that out, because I think I thought you were going to say something very scientific. So it's interesting to hear, you know, that you're leaving us with just such a simple message.
Yes.
When we can overcomplicate it, like, oh my God, what's my estrogen level? What's my testosterone? And instead you're like, you know what? Have compassion and understanding and less judgment toward yourself and others. Like it doesn't have to be that scientifically confusing.
Exactly.
Oh, that's so my language. So my language. So yes. And you know that there are positives to it. So what a beautiful thing to end on. Like, because I think it gets such a negative rap too. And that's just, I get like exhausted by the negative, conversation around certain things, like dating was one, you know, or like this is another one. And it's just like, can we open up our lens a little bit wider?
Yes. And get your hormones tested.
Yes. Do get
your hormones. And if your hormones are really low, safety studies have shown that bioidentical hormones are very safe. So if women out there are freaking out and they remember that old study from years ago that was misread, and it was also done on synthetic hormones, women, you can kind of stop worrying so much. If you start supplementing early on, once you hit perimenopause, menopause, there are a lot of protective effects, cardiovascular protective effects to keep you from having a heart attack, effects to keep you slow down the incidence of Alzheimer's, and then you can get your energy back, your libido back, your juiciness back, all the things.
Nice.
I'm a huge proponent of bioidentical hormones, because I'm on bioidentical hormones. I've been on them for 5 years, and I'm not going to lie, my journey is still up and down. I still have really bad days, but my really bad days are way less on bioidentical hormones than they were with
ice.
So I'm a big fan.
Once you get on them, are you on them forever?
No, you can just...
You can
wean
adjust. Okay, cool. Good to know. Okay, that's cool. I have done very little. I've done some testosterone. That's it. Yeah. So
that's all I needed for like the first 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was when the hot flashes started massively that I was like, yeah, it's time for the mist.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. Good. Yeah. My hot flashes are still so sporadic that they're just confusing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm just like, I'm sweating at night. So like last night or night before, whatever it was. So yeah. So, okay. Thank you. Anything else before we go? I feel like we're good. Yeah, okay, good. Thank you so much. And I just appreciate this, you know, personally so much too, just to gain so much understanding. And I know there's so many people who do too. So thank you. And can you share how everyone can find you, please?
Yes. So if you look for me on Instagram or Facebook, Dr. Natalie Ledbetter, or you can look at Upgrade Labs, 5th Street. That's on Facebook and Instagram, or Upgrade Labs, 5th Street, upgradelabs.com/5th Street.
And I'll have everything in the show notes too, so people can click through, find you. And I'm going to do my best to put whatever we referred about in this episode in the show notes too, so people can tune in.
And I'm my husband and I are speaking at the 10th annual biohacking conference that's coming up in Dallas.
Congratulations. So, that's so cool.
Yeah, if anybody wants,
when is that?
Come see us. It's the last week in May.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so we'll be speaking at the pre-conference on Wednesday on how to look as young as you feel.
Oh my God. That's, yes, please. I'm like so here for it. Very cool. Congrats. And that's so exciting. And I'm excited to check out Upgrade Labs too. So thank you. So grateful, Natalie. And grateful to you for being here today and having this conversation. It's really important that we open the dialogue further and further about our own health journeys and what like life is. This is life, right? And so, and it's important for anyone having the human experience. So thank you so much for being here. I love you so much. Keep going. You're kicking ass. And, you know, give yourself that grace and compassion. I love you so much. Till next time.
This has been the Amy Edwards Show from Overcome Studios. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe. And thank you so much for being here. Sign up for our newsletter at amyedwards.com.